Hello and welcome to the Red Robin Rugby League World Cup podcast powered by 360 Chartered Accountants and Budget Ties Auto Centre. Joining me to look back at the opening round of fixtures is Rugby League commentator and visionary, Mr. Jason Costigan. I can't believe it's a week since we last spoke and previewed the first round of fixtures and the tournament as a whole. It's time flies, doesn't it?
Oh, it's been fabulous stuff. Jono, g'day to you. G'day to all those viewers around the rugby league universe as the Rugby League World Cup rolls on in the old dart. And I've got to say, the first eight games in that opening week, absolutely captivating, Jono. So many heroes for different countries. And you don't have to win a game to be a winner. And you saw some great highlights in the match involving Greece, for example, comes to mind. The gallantry and the courage of the Lebanese. The Jamaicans bringing that Calypso flavour to the World Cup, which is trailblazing in its own right, of course. So many stars of the show in that opening week of the tournament.
Yeah, fantastic. So let's go back to Saturday, the opening round of fixtures. Of course, we had England taking on Samoa and then Australia taking on Fiji. England 60 points to 6 victors over the Samoans. Fantastic build-up, of course, pre-game. Unfortunately, the microphones and stuff stopped working, so Kaiser Chiefs could only sing one song. But once we got into the action, it was a really good performance from England, wasn't it? And things don't look too happy in the Samoan camp at the moment. And that was, the performance wasn't maybe what was expected, but there's a few rumblings going on in the Costa.
Well, we might just go straight for the jugular here, and some breaking news coming out of West Yorkshire. I've got it on good authority that all is not well in the Samoan camp. We'll come back to the game in a moment, but I want to repeat this. All is not well in the Samoan camp. They've really battened down the hatches after that shellacking at the hands of England in the first game of the tournament. So much so that proud Samoan and former Super League coach Willie Poaching, well known to many of your viewers, of course, on the podcast, Willie Poaching has been invited, the story goes, to Samoan training during the week in the aftermath of that shellacking at the hands of England. It was all above board, signed off the night before. He was invited to come to training. And then all of a sudden, at Doncaster, he was effectively told to piss off. And that message came from the head coach via somebody else and was relayed to Willie Poaching. And I can tell you and your viewers, look, Willie's a great bloke. I first called him, I think, back in 1995 when he played for the Warriors in the Winfield Cup a long time ago. He's a great bloke. He's proud of his bloodlines. He's proud of his Samoan heritage. He effectively, as I say, was told to piss off. He left the ground in disgust, upset, and I believe his son does not want to go and watch Samoa play this weekend. What does that tell you?
Wow. Well, so, Costa, let's get this right. So, who invited him to the training camp? Was it the coach, or was it the chairman of the Samoan board?
Yeah, my understanding, Jono, it came from Sua himself, the El Supremo of the Federation, of the governing body, and he was signed off the night before at training, and he's turned up at Doncaster to watch the boys train, and then it's become apparent that it was a closed session. So, why wasn't he told the night before, look, tomorrow it's a closed session? To me, he's part of that brotherhood. It's a closed session. Jono, that means you and I shouldn't be going there as members of the media, if you like, the press corps with cameras, secret cameras. I understand that and I respect that. Yeah, I remember when Maurice Lindsay, he told me to piss off 30 years ago, literally, in Townsville. In 1992, actually, I was a very young broadcaster. I called Great Britain down under, but hours beforehand, Maurice Lindsay told me to piss off because it was a closed session. So I get it as good as anybody. But Willie Poaching is part of that brotherhood of the Samoan story in rugby league. He did the right thing and he was asked the night before, invited to come. That's my information. And he's turned up in good faith the very next day at Donny and been told that he can't watch the boys train. And that message came from Parrish himself. That's my mail. That's my information. And was passed on to somebody to give the message to Poaching. And he left the ground upset and in disgust. And further to that, Willie's son will not be going to support their beloved Samoa this weekend. That's after the flogging at the hands of England at St. James's Park on opening day.
Wow. And I mean, Matt Parrish, it's not the first time he's coveted controversy, is it, in his role as head coach at Samoa?
Well, Jono, let's get right into the teeth of this. He is the, of all coaches at the World Cup, they're all under the pump, but there's no one under the pump more than Matt Parrish. He's got an embarrassment of riches. And yes, they had mitigating circumstances in that first up game against the host nation with injuries. It's been compounded, of course, by the suspension of Milford, which comes as no surprise. Milford was lucky to stay on the field. You know it. I know it. And a lot of your viewers know it. And look, he's in a world of pain, a world of hurt. He made a comment post-match. I found this rather fascinating, Jono. If you cast your mind back to what was said, and check the transcripts, check the tape. He said words to the effect, it's not what happens in the first game, it's what happens in the last game. Well, on the back of that garbage that they served up in game one, they won't come within a ball's roar of the first of the last game. They won't come within a ball's roar of the last game, given the garbage that they served up in game one. I note that my Australian colleague Andrew Voss said that the team should be sent home. I think Parrish should be sent home because, to me, he must be the problem. You know, they've got all these players. They've got these superstars. And they played, their forwards played like powder puffs and their backs were marshmallows. England, no one expected them. You know, how many most proud English people you know, not in their wildest dreams did they expect England to flog Samoa the way they did. And it's the talk of the rugby league world. And if Samoa don't win convincingly this weekend, the noise is only going to get louder.
Yeah. And prior to the England-Samoa game, the talk in the pubs and clubs around Newcastle was about a tight encounter, expecting a lot more from Samoa. You know, many people tipping Samoa for the victory. And then to see England not just win, but win convincingly and put a big score on the board, I think it caught everybody by surprise.
Well, let's give some credit and some plaudits here to the likes of Burgess and Whitehead for laying that platform on, so that the likes of Williams and Wellesby could get that back line firing and providing quality ball to the strike power out wide in the form of people like debutant Dominic Young and Makinson on the other wing. You know, they were outstanding right across the park and they were relentless. And the capitulation by Samoa in the second half, that hasn't had a lot of publicity, not as much as I thought. Geez, it must have been one hell of a speech at halftime from Parrish in the sheds, Jono. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall because look what happened. Look how they responded and how they picked themselves up. As I said, there's a big question mark as to where Samoa go in this tournament. I thought they were a genuine title contender, but you'd have to get a head examination if you think that they can bounce back from this and get through to the big dance at Old Trafford. Old Trafford might be where the theatre of dreams. Well, right now, Parrish and Samoa, they're in the middle of a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, it would be a great story, wouldn't it, if they did end up getting to the final. You know, an opening round defeat, 60 points to 6, and then to get to the final. But they look a long way off at the moment. And
well, I just want to qualify some of my comments. You mean I was with that first big wave of Polynesian talent and particularly Samoan talent coming through in the early 2000s, when I was calling the Warriors, the voice of the Warriors for a decade, and something I'm very proud of, but also the international game, calling various nations in that window with Sky Television in New Zealand. And to see players coming through like Clinton Torpy and Ali Noatiti, and I could go on and on. Some of them perhaps not the biggest superstars. Iafeka Paliasina. A lot of memories come flooding back from those halcyon days when the Warriors got through to their first grand final and culminating internationally, let's not forget, in New Zealand winning a World Cup for the first time in 2008. So that Cinderella story with the Samoans. And, you want to go back to Graham Lowe when he was in charge of what I think they were called Western Samoa. So they've been around for a long time. And now is their moment to stand up. And I've got to dip my hat to Jason Taumalolo and the Tongans for setting the benchmark for the Pacifica Nations. And Taumalolo saying, follow me, boys. And players, if you like, defecting, but pledging their allegiance to where their heart lies. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, you got to salute players who follow their heart, not where their wallet is. And we've seen a fair bit of that, haven't we, in this tournament? And that's to be admired by people far and wide. And it predicts, well, it makes the NRL and the World Cup unpredictable. And that's a good thing for rugby league. I said something about last week about the predictability of the Super League. It's the same teams winning the trophy. That's boring. It doesn't make for good television, Jono. And if you want to get more money for the game to help clubs, whether it's at the amateur level or the professional level, you don't need that. And I think the Samoan story is a great story. And that's why I'm cranky that this has happened, because I wanted Samoa to be strong. I wanted a close game first up. And now it seems that they're imploding.
Yeah. And they've got Greece up on Sunday.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Greece are known for smashing plates. They've got some very courageous players, not just Magoulias. And they'll be looking to smash Samoa.
Is it time for something radical, Costa? Is it time for Paris to go mid-tournament?
Beg your pardon?
Is it time for Paris to go mid-tournament?
Well, I thought he should have been punted after that display. Mm. There's been a lot of rumblings and a lot of speculation. There was the talk of Sonny Bill Williams and the Johnses, of course, going back a while ago. And, you know, you'd have to have earmuffs on if you haven't been able to pick up on the noise.
Yeah. Well, thank you for breaking that, Costa, because that is big news coming out of the Samoan camp. Another team who was maybe expected to do a little bit better was Fiji. They took on Australia in the night game on Saturday. They got pumped 42 points to 8. For long spells, there was competing and there was competitive, but ultimately Australia's firepower came to the fore.
Well, there was a lot of firepower there and a lot of strike out wide. You know, the Fox, once he got the ball, that runaway try, that long-range try was breathtaking, wasn't it? A Fox on the run. You know, if you had a pub in the north of England called the Fox and the Hound, would you be looking for the Hound for a photo opportunity, wouldn't you, Jono? Because, you know, he brings people through the turnstiles, whether he's playing for club, state or country. And I'm pretty sure a couple of weeks ago he was actually playing in an Indigenous tournament on the south coast of New South Wales for his beloved Wiradjuri people. Wiradjuri is the people that come, the Indigenous people, the First Nations people that come from places like Wagga Wagga, which means City of Crows in the local Wiradjuri language in southern New South Wales. It's a place that I used to live and read the news in, and he's very proud of that heritage, and he's a great character, isn't he? But he just wasn't the only one, of course, starring for the Aussies. I thought Harry Grant was absolutely outstanding. 7 debutants for the Green and Golds, 6 more coming up for this next game against Scotland. And I think the scoreboard attendant may well be very busy tonight. As for Fiji, I felt sorry for them. There was so much excitement when I was in Fiji last month, calling their domestic grand final, the Vodafone Cup grand final. But, you know, they obviously were down on players themselves, the Saifidi boys not participating. So it hasn't gone to plan. Joe Rumbelli or Joe Dakuyutonga, the coach, last I heard, was still in hospital. So a big shout out to Joe. He's been an ornament of the game as a player and as a coach. And his sickness, obviously, is something that is certainly not lost on a lot of people in rugby league. And I know that Waiskata Virata stepping into the breach, doing the best he could with the players he had. But big shout out to Joe and wishing him a speedy recovery.
Yeah, and then if we fast forward to Sunday, 3 games there. Obviously, you've just mentioned Scotland taking on Australia. They, maybe a bit of a surprise to many, came unstuck, 4 points to 28, defeat for Scotland, Italy the victors. And anybody who watched that game will be mightily impressed by the Italians and how dominant there was in the game.
Yeah, I thought Brown was leader of the pack and was were very much deserving of man of the match honours. Jack Campagnolo played well. I'm a big fan of Jack's. I think he's got a great future. And as I said to you, I think was it a week or so ago, following in the footsteps on the international stage of his grandfather, who scored 3 tries against the touring Great Britain team many, many moons ago. And actually was on the family farm, on his grandfather's farm, about 6 months ago. So, you know, there's a lot of passion for these players and for these teams, more than what people realise. And so the spaghetti rugby that was on display from the Azzurri was to be admired. And I know that in the last 24 hours or so, Tim Sheens, who's the director of coaching and strategy for the Italian Federation, has addressed the players. He's got a great working relationship with Leo Epifania, who is the head coach of the Western Suburbs Magpies in the New South Wales rugby league scene. And of course, Leo, a man who'd walk over hot coals for Italian rugby league. And I think it's a great sign, a positive sign for the Azzurri. I thought what they did was pretty good, and I think it shocked a few people.
Yeah, and interesting to note, one of the Italian supporters was Terry Campese. He's over in the country. I saw him on social media that he was up in Newcastle supporting the Italians. Interestingly, they take on Fiji tomorrow, the first game of the day. Is there a chance of maybe a shot there, Italy pipping Fiji for the 2 points?
Well, for Wisecat of Arata and the Fijian coaching team, it's a nervous wait, Jono. And there's a degree of unpredictability here in this match. I think Italy will give it their best shot, but you would think that the likes of Kamakamitha and Kikau, they got so much grunt up front. Brown's going to need some help in that forward pack for Italy. And, you know, I'm not convinced that they can withstand the Barty. And they are the Barty. I don't want to pick on your British colleagues, but some of the pronunciation of the players from the Pacifica nations has certainly raised my eyebrows. It's not something that I condone, and I want to say that
this is why we need you, Costa. This is why we need you for a master class in pronunciation.
Well, I'm not saying I've got all the answers, but I was recommended to participate with the international broadcast team by the rights holder in New Zealand, but your English colleagues decided that was not necessary. So here we are in watching the World Cup from down under. So it's disappointing, but it is the Barty. And I know that the Barty will be licking their chops here because they'll think, look, if we're serious about doing some damage here in this tournament, we've got to get rid of the Italians, but they need to bounce back. And I just wonder how much energy and also mental space got sucked out of them in that first up match against a very rusty Kangaroos, who admittedly were playing their first game in 3 years, Jono.
Yeah. They're interesting. They look very good for it, though, didn't they? The second game on Sunday was Jamaica, who made their tournament debut, coming up against an island side who many are tipping as being maybe dark horses for the tournament. Ireland put in a very convincing performance, defeating Jamaica 48-2 at Headingley in Leeds. Could we have expected more from Jamaica? Or do you think Ireland were just, you know, they've got the players, they've got some really good firepower. And what I think Ireland have got is the unity. We've just been talking about Samoa and how it looks to be a bit fractious. Ireland, you'd say that they're a very tight-knit group and it's paying dividends from on the pitch.
Well, then the Irish are pretty happy right now because, of course, Adam Dwyhe, as he's properly called, and I was calling him Dwyhe on Sydney radio earlier in the year before it became fashionable in this tournament, I might add. That's a Lebanese name as opposed to a Pacifica name. But Dwyhe obviously getting suspended and unsuccessful with his appeal. I'll come to more of that in a moment. But he's a big out for Lebanon against Ireland, who will be brimming with confidence. The fact that they didn't have their try line breached by the Reggae Warriors, I think that Jed Corcoran will draw enormous strength from keeping that try line intact in that match. Yeah, they conceded 2 points. Look, Jamaica would be disappointed they didn't score, but they worked their backsides off. And I think there was some courageous performances there across the park for the Reggae Warriors. But there's no substitute for class, Jono. And Keary has got it by the truckload. And a great foundation, again, provided by his front six, including Jolliffe. But hats off also to the likes of the Kings and the Seniors. They were great contributors for the Wolfhounds in that first up success.
Yeah, and of course, Hull Kingston Rovers, George King, Frankie Holton, Senior, all showing up very well for the Wolfhounds. The third game on Sunday, New Zealand against Lebanon. And Lebanon did give New Zealand a good run for the money, didn't they? Probably to many people's surprise.
Well, they did, and, particularly remembering that Lebanon were down to 12 men for a quarter of the game, and the send-off was a big talking point. It caught the host broadcaster by surprise. Poor old Vossi, I have felt sorry for him because he thought that Robbie Farah had been sent off, the Lebanese trainer. In fact, of course, it was Adam Dwyhe, and I've seen what was said in the judiciary and appeals process. And if we believe what's been printed, the language that came from Dwyhe was utterly appalling. And he's lucky he didn't get rubbed out for 2 weeks. You know, you can't condone that sort of foul talk. It's one of two words you can't say on television, Jono, for those people who didn't catch it. And it's the one that doesn't rhyme with truck. So you can work out which one it was. It was disgraceful. It's not a good look for the game. It's not a good look for the families that we're trying to bring through the turnstiles at Rugby League World Cup. I'm sure those comments that I've just rolled out would be echoed by John Dutton and the people running the tournament. So, you know, the Lebanese, they really busted a boiler in that game, but New Zealand stacked with talent. And how many people do you reckon, Jono, want to come through the turnstiles to see Joey Manu? How good is he? Mm-hmm. Mitchell Moses and co did their best, but the circus act that is Joey Manu, he is an absolute freak. And I look forward to calling him for club or country, because he's just an amazing talent. And I'll say it now, you know, if he isn't going to become the Golden Boot winner this year, and I'm one of the judges, I'm only one of many, and I'm very privileged to be in that role, and I thank Brad Walter and others for giving us that opportunity, you know, I mean, I'll walk across the Pennines.
I do wonder, Costa, I mean, New Zealand, you know, they might have looked at that game and thinking that they were going to put a lot more points on than 34. Yep. And I do wonder in Group C, the Ireland-Lebanon game is going to be a really intriguing encounter. And there's points difference between Lebanon and New Zealand in that game could be key for the table, because, you know, if you keep the scorelines down and you're going for that second place in the group, you know, you've got a fantastic chance. So it's going to be really intriguing.
Well, Jono, I'm going to make a prediction now, Jono. I'm going to jump right in and say, I think Dwayne being rubbed out for round two of the tournament is a huge blow to the Cedars. I saw some of the Lebanese players go around against Malta in Sydney mid-season, around the same time as we had the Pacific Test weekend. And the likes of Dwayne and Moses were at the ground supporting their beloved Cedars. They did not play that night. But, you know, he came up with the 40-20. He had some nice touches, Dwayne. His absence is a body blow to Michael Checker, Michael Checker, I should say. And they will miss him horribly. And I reckon the Wolfhounds privately, at the very least, will be doing cartwheels. And so long as the likes of King up front, as the captain of the Irish team, lead from the front and provide a platform so that Keary can work his magic out the back, I think Ireland have got them covered.
Yeah, they take on, they play each other, sorry, on Sunday at the Lee Sports Village. The other group game in that group is Saturday evening. Of course, in Hull at the MKM Stadium, New Zealand taking on Jamaica. As resilient as Jamaica was against Ireland, they're going to have to put double effort in against New Zealand, aren't they, if they're going to be competitive in that fixture?
Well, I think this will be the biggest score of the tournament. There you go. How's that for a bold prediction?
You know, reckon triple figures?
I'm not sure if it'll be triple figures, but when you mention triple figures, particularly where you're broadcasting from today, you cast your mind back when the Kangaroos scored 110 points against Russia at the Boulevard 22 years ago. I'm not sure how many Red Robin podcast viewers can say where they were on that occasion where Ryan Girdler had an absolute field day. I reckon he still goes into pubs and people ask Ryan Girdler, mate, did you have a sore foot? I think he kicked 17 goals that day, Jono. It was a bonanza. And, of course, the Russians, well, they disappeared like a Russian submarine. But I think that the Kiwis will rack up a massive scoreline here. I don't want them to hit triple figures. I don't think that doesn't do anything good for the game.
No.
And I'd love to see the underdogs at least get on the try scoring sheet after missing out first up.
Yeah, it's not a great look, is it, for the tournament or the broadcaster, especially because it'll be prime time Saturday evening as well. So you've got a chance for new viewers. But yeah,
I'll tell you what though, if they score, can you imagine what sort of party? I know there's a big West Indian community in different parts of the north of England, but in places like South London and what about in Kingston, Jamaica? You reckon there'll be a bit of a party in Montego Bay or what if they get on the score sheet?
Yeah, and that's it, isn't it? You know, This World Cup has provided a fantastic opportunity for countries like Jamaica. And we spoke about in the Rugby League World Cup preview that we recorded last week, the Jamaicans giving, I think, something like six homegrown players the opportunity to play on the big stage and coming up against someone like New Zealand. This is the stuff of dreams for some of these players.
Oh, for sure. This is the stuff that they'll remember for many, many years ago. Last month, Jono, when I was walking the streets of Nandi in Fiji, I came across a gentleman with his young kids walking the streets, just a lovely night out, and we got talking. And it just so happens he actually represented Fiji back in the days of the Super League divide when the ARL, Ken Arthurson and John Quayle, was basically isolated by Super League with Maurice Lindsay in England, of course, and what happened in New Zealand and other parts of the world. And the only game that the Kangaroos could get was against a bunch of villagers from Fiji. Well, this gentleman was part of that village representative team that went to Marathon Stadium in Newcastle when the Kangaroos carved them up. And I said to this gentleman's kids, I said, your father is a dead set legend, because that was an opportunity of a lifetime, something he will cherish for the rest of his life. And the kids were beaming to hear the story because they probably hadn't heard it the way I'd expressed it. And similarly, the Jamaicans have the opportunity here in three games in this tournament. No guarantee they're going to come back, of course. They did awfully well to qualify. They need to make the most of that opportunity. And I will be as pleased as anybody if they can get across the try line.
Yeah. Well, good luck to Jamaica. Monday evening, we saw France take on Greece. The French running out 34 points to 12 to Greece. And we're just talking about Jamaica and how important it is that they've got the opportunity to play on the big stage. And it's the same for Greece, isn't it?
For sure. And the skills of Billy Magulius, I know that his time at Warrington was rather unhappy and didn't work out the way that both parties wanted. But he's obviously got a big heart for that Hellenic background that he's proud to represent as the captain of Greece. And that try that he laid on was absolutely fantastic. It's not a new tactic either. We've seen it before. I know that anyone who follows the famous Newtown Jets down under will know that he's tried that trick before with great effect. For those regulars at Henson Park, for the mighty Blue Bags, the Newtown Jets. So Magulius, he'll be cooking up something. I'm not sure what it is, but it's not Greek cuisine. They'll be looking to do some damage here. I thought that what they did in that first up game was enterprising. But we talk about the French, you know, Gigot was, well, rocks and diamonds, you know, kicks out on the full. They got to get that right. Arthur Morg's a great talent. Garcia, I thought, was man of the match. He was man of the match. I think that the French need to play well in this tournament because they don't want to be going out in straight sets here. Just imagine if France go through the tournament as underachievers in the eyes of many observers, not just the FFR 13 people. They want to have something to take into the World Cup at home in 3 years from now, and I wish them well with those endeavours. Laurent Frayssinous is doing a pretty fair job, I think, backed up by Trent Robinson. But it all starts on the field with application from the word go.
Yeah, they take on England on Saturday, tomorrow. England making a number of changes to their squad. It looks like Hulkington Rovers' Ryan Hall will be featuring, which is a fantastic achievement for him. The longevity he's had in top-class rugby league, international rugby league. So to see him out on the field would be a real pleasure. But I suppose France might look at this and think that if England are making a number of changes and they want to come up with a statement victory, this is the time to do it.
Well, I'll tell you what, it would put the cat amongst the pigeons, John, wouldn't it? You know, I wish Hall all the very best. It's a great opportunity. I know that the city will be proud to see him line up in this particular fixture. But, you know, France, they've got mountains to climb in this tournament, and it's a pretty big one here. This is probably a bit bigger than Ben Nevis in terms of mountains to climb, in fact. I can't see them winning, but perhaps they get England at a good time with those changes that you've touched on. England coming off one hell of a high in that massive win, that landslide victory, that catastrophic defeat for Samoa first up. Maybe their heads will be in the clouds. Who knows? France need to start well. And as I said, that kicking game has got to be on song. And Morg he cannot do it himself.
No, no. And we don't need to see France blow up. If they, if they've got any they've got any desire for a victory, they definitely can't blow up. We move to Tuesday night and a game, Costo, that I know you was absolutely excited about. Probably the game of the round, Tonga versus Papua New Guinea.
Absolutely fabulous, wasn't it? And I thought the better side did lose. And Apapa, he's getting a lot of bouquets for his performance. And so he should. Terrific player. I think he'll be a great player next year as Lee come back into the Super League, back into the top flight. We might also remind everybody watching the podcast, as of 24 hours ago or so, they are now the Lee Leopards. So I think Apapa for the Lee Leopards. He'll be on the prowl, no pun intended, for club or country, depending on which jersey he's wearing. How he basically cut through the defence, the Tongan defence, the teeth of the Tongan defence was absolutely breathtaking. Don't forget, this was a Tongan side, again, stacked with talent. Tamalolo missing because of suspension, a notable absentee sitting up there next to the Big Bad Wolf. And the Big Bad Wolf probably had his claws out after the game. He was expecting a tough game. He was right in saying the things that he did post-match, Jono. It was the first ever win by the Reds against Papua New Guinea. So that's a great achievement. Mm. Papua New Guinea will take a lot of positives out of the game. I thought the performance of Apapa was absolutely world-class. I thought Lamb probably played his best game for Papua New Guinea. And I think, as I say, a lot of positives come out of the game for the Kumuls. And Stanley Tappen, I'm sure, will keep the boys with their chins up this week, coming into week two of the tournament. But as for Tonga, they want to do a lot better than that. They got out of jail, and Kalamatangi with the try at the end. Gee, they got out of jail, didn't they?
Yeah, and of course, a bit of controversy as well with a disallowed video ref try for Papua New Guinea. It could have been a lot different.
Well, Jono, I'm glad you brought that up. Because guess what? You know, they got robbed. I said it earlier in the week on tweeting about it, and on the night during the game, they got robbed. I can't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And anyway, it's fish and chip paper now. I prefer it crumbed, if not grilled, but it is fish and chip paper. And Papua New Guinea, for supporters, I was talking to people in Port Moresby in the aftermath of the game. They were very dirty on the use of the technology, that it didn't lead to the result that was expected. I don't have a vested interest in who won, but I thought Papua New Guinea got robbed. And those officials should hang their head in shame, because I think they got it wrong.
Well, what, Costa, what's your opinion on referees being allowed to send up a try and give their opinion on whether it's a try or a no try?
Well, that's what we've become used to in the NRL, unless there's, you've got to have compelling evidence. And see, I'm not saying that everything the NRL does is the way it needs to be for the Poms or the World Cup. In most cases, it probably should be, particularly with licensed teams and broadcast rights and all that stuff. But in terms of video analysis, you know, what the game is down under is that if you see evidence in the box that contradicts the on-field decision, then you need to say so. Sometimes in the past, I've called many a game, of course, where the referee says, I've got no idea. And I think that's refreshing for the fans and the people who are watching the game, who pay big money for their subscriptions. I know the games are on the BBC in the UK, and it's great to see the national broadcaster providing such great resources to showcase our international showpiece. But for those people who cough up money week to week for their pay TV subscriptions in various parts of the world, you know, I think they want to see some honesty. The fans want to see honesty. You know, if you got it wrong or if you don't know what it is, say so. Yeah. And I've said it before too. I've got no idea if it's a try. It's touch and go. Is it touch and go? Well, let's look at the tape. What we saw the other night with that try in the corner, or would-be try, is that, you know, the corner post, don't forget, This is not 1983 with Queensland losing in Hull.
Yeah.
Fast forward 39 years later, tries are worth 4 points, and we got video referees and a whole lot more in our game. The game is so, so different. You know it. Fossils and dinosaurs know it. But they got it wrong. The corner post is not part of the end goal. And I should salute Vossi here because Andrew was very much the crusader there and getting rid of the corner post all those years ago. And the video referee, for some reason, said no try. Imagine if that was a green light and how that changes the game. And as for Reece Martin, what about his goal kicking? Unbelievable. We'd be remiss of us if we didn't touch on that tonight.
Yeah, he's equaled the world record for consecutive kicks. The record was held by Jamie Ellis. He achieved it at Hull Kingston Rovers during our championship season in 2017. Liam Finn originally set the record back in 2012. And Reece Martin, I mean, if you needed someone to kick a goal, you'd put your life on it. It's him who would do it.
Absolutely. You know, but, you know, kicking goals is something that is important. I think we talk about goal kicking. You know, I mean, I'll make a prediction with the Kangaroos tonight. I think Nathan Cleary will score 30 points and he'll have a bumper harvest. Goal kicking won't come into that game, obviously, tonight between the Kangaroos and the Bravehearts. But at the business end of this tournament, it may well be very much important and critical, in fact. And so, you know, having a shot at goal when there's cheap points on offer in a game that may be tight should not be sniggered at. And so, you know, look, Papua New Guinea were just unlucky to lose the game. Tonga, well, they'll be saying a few prayers this week, and rightly so.
Yeah, and the last game of the round was Wales versus the Cook Islands, and probably a lot closer than many people expected. And I thought Wales put a really good show on. They was in it right until the last play of the game.
Well, I thought Lloyd was fabulous, fantastic for the Welsh. You know, the fact that he had the ball in effectively what was it, the last throw of the dice for the Welsh. And I just thought, mate, this bloke, he's got a big engine and they're still having a dig. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, I got it wrong in that I thought the Cook Islands, I thought the Cookies, as they are called, would blow Wales off the park, particularly given that you look at the Welsh team and how bereft they are of professional players, full of part-timers, if not amateurs. And I thought they played their hearts out. And again, they should take a lot of pride out of that performance. Gelling was brilliant for the Cook Islands. I think he ran for something like 300 metres. I know that Ford was officially declared the man of the match, but I thought the centre for the Cook Islands was the best player on the field. He had plenty of mates in a performance that Tony Iroh will be able to build on. They didn't play a warm-up match, the Cook Islands. They have some of their best players playing for other countries. Let's not lose sight of that. It's a small country, a beautiful country too, Jono. I can't encourage you and your viewers enough, if they ever get the opportunity to come to the Pacific, to go to the Cook Islands. It's a beautiful part of the world. And I think that the Cook Islands will, as I say, improve on that performance and expect a much better game and a more prominent display next time from their fullback, Kale Iroh, the son of the beast himself, Kevin, who I'm sure was very, very pleased with that performance by his young fella.
Yeah, and the game seemed to change and the tide seemed to change in favour of the Cook Islands when Brad Takarangi came on.
For sure. Yeah. And his kicking game as well and whatnot. He didn't get everything right. It was his first game back since May. And, of course, what has happened off the field is well documented. I'm not going to go over that, obviously, but it's been a long road to recovery. And it was very nice to see Brad acknowledge the rehabilitation people in your part of the world for getting him back on the field, because that was no mean feat. This was a serious hamstring injury. I did a story on this, in fact, in the Cook Islands News, going back before the first game of the tournament. So a long road to recovery for Brad Takarangi. His experience off the bench, absolutely critical for the Cook Islands. And I think, just summing up, that's where the Cook Islands got on top of Wales, was, Jono, through their bench. They had them covered and then some.
Yeah, so we look forward to the next round of fixtures. We open up this evening with Australia taking on Scotland in Coventry. Saturday starts with Fiji taking on Italy. And then, of course, we have the big game, England versus France. And then we finish on Saturday with New Zealand versus Jamaica at the MKM Stadium in Hull. On Sunday, we have Lebanon taking on Ireland. The second game on Sunday is Samoa versus Greece. On Monday, we have Tonga versus Wales. And then on Tuesday, we finish with Papua New Guinea versus the Cook Islands. Costo, which games are you looking forward to in the second round of the fixtures?
Well, I'm looking forward to all these games. And I'll tell you what is really getting under my skin is seeing these squads announced a couple of days before a game. And they mean absolutely nothing. Jack S. And I call on the Rugby League World Cup social media people to have a cold shower, because it does nothing for anybody, because you're still not none the wiser, Jono. They've got the England team and it looks like it's legit. And then you work out that the seventh player is George Burgess. We haven't had a halfback for England that big for a long time. I know he's beefy, but you know, he'd rather feed himself than feed the scrums.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think for me, the standout game potentially could be Papua New Guinea, Cook Island. I mean, Tonga, Wales, that group there is a really interesting group, isn't it, D, where you'd, you know, you'd say Wales probably likely to finish bottom, but the competitive performance that they're putting against the Cook Islands makes you think that that's going to be probably the most competitive group.
Well, I tell you what, I'll counter your comments, and I'm not disagreeing with any of that, Jono, but I will say, if you said to me, pick the game that you're most looking forward to, I think the game and the closest game will be between the Wolfhounds and the Cedars. I'll come back to what I said earlier about Dwayne being rubbed out with his much-publicised suspension, and I roll my eyes, and for good reason. The fact that he even tried, he had the audacity. And Checker and the Lebanese officials thought, let's appeal it. Let's see how we go. And then the evidence that was put forward by referee Grant Atkins, disgraceful language, and played out in the media. Geez, how utterly embarrassing for Adam Dwayne and Lebanon. He'll have to take his medicine and watch the game. And I think this match will come down to a stroke of brilliance on either side. Moses for Lebanon, or Keary for the Irish. And to me, it's the toss of a coin. Right now, I'm tipping Ireland.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good game. I'm looking forward to watching that. I'm going to see history made on Monday when Casey Badger becomes the first female to referee a men's World Cup match. The game is between Wales and Tonga at St. Helens. And, you know, it's a new era now, isn't it? And these kind of moves from the International Rugby League and Rugby League in general should be applauded, because we want equality, we want fairness, and if you're up to the job, then you should get your chance.
Yeah, for sure. And well done to Casey. I'm glad, I'm really pleased that you brought that up. And, you know, respect for the referees is my underlying theme and my criticism of Dwayne. And, you know, I don't want to be sound to be too harsh on the bloke here, but respect for our match officials, men and women, is important, Jono, and I'm sure you would echo those sentiments. And Casey Badger is a great story. I called a lot of rugby league involving her husband. I'm sure he's chuffed to bits. I caught up with him, in fact, at Campbelltown a few months ago in his work there with the West Tigers, if memory serves me right. And it's a terrific story. She's a great advert for ladies becoming involved with refereeing and officiating. And I'm sure she's not the only person there in that space as well. We've got, I think, the young lady from New Zealand whose name escapes me, who was involved as a touch judge in the opening week of the tournament as well. So whether you've got a flag or a whistle, that stuff is to be commended. And as you're right in saying, it's trailblazing stuff and something that the game, with its push into that world of inclusiveness, it's something, Jono, we should be so proud of.
Yeah, definitely. And we're very nearly at the end of this episode of the Red Robin Rugby League World Cup podcast. But Costo, you're going to be releasing something on social media later today.
Well, I'm going to have a bit to say more about Willie Poaching basically being invited by the Federation, the Samoan Rugby League, to come to training at Doncaster and then effectively being told to piss off by the head coach. You know, I mean, that is surely going to be blown up. And I encourage the media. You'd have to be living under a rock if you don't understand how big that story is. That is just disgraceful. Someone like Poaching on a pedestal, proud Samoan, and then told to piss off, and his son now not going to the next game. That's how upset the family is after what happened. So I'll have more to say about that on my Twitter feed in the coming hours at Costo Jason. And I'll also be revealing my team of the week after what we saw in those first eight matches. So many stars, and no surprise in me revealing that Joey Manu is the first player picked in that team of the week, which we'll release in the coming hours in the lead up to the first game for week two between the Bravehearts and the Kangaroos.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that team of the week. That brings us to the end of another Red Robin podcast special with Jono and Costo. The second preseason mini pod is also out now, so make sure you give that a view or listen at all the usual places. We are, of course, powered by 360 Chartered Accountants and Budget Ties Auto Centre. But for now, come on, England!
Good on you, Jono.